Lee says, I love the conversation going on between Carolyn and Akito. Breaking ancestral patterns, very good. Thank you, Akito, for sharing and for both of you offering me more insight. Hugs. Then Jean says, and then he put you to sleep. Then she says, we don't care if you are impressed, Bob. Excellent. She says, we are creation, and there we are. Then Jade, our buddy here in Maui, says, hi, Bob and Ginny. Ian's explanation of the cancer cells reminds me of the cells described in the book by Rebecca Skloot, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, L-A-C-K-S. The eternal cells could be the same cells except in perfect form. Yay! And on it goes. Are we over the limit? Are we finished?
Well, we have officially finished our two-hour part of the program,
we
Bob.
We would love to continue to engage you.
But
all right,
we'll continue,
so we will...
except we have an outro song for our 2 hours that we want to play.
Right.
I dedicate this song to you, Bob.
Thank you.
So this is for you, and then we'll press on, except I have to take about an hour's break. But Greg will stay with you.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Myself, I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moments of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a very appropriate song for the analog phase of media, you know, before the digital. That's it. That's Rump Silkin and What My Chart Shows That I Was back in the Secret Council 10 or just before that. We have two messages from Allison. She says, Ion did say complete on one of the calls today. Interesting, she says. Then she says, also, the format of all this in-quick chat. What? What don't you understand? You're making noise.
I'm muted.
No, but it comes over here. It gets into my phone. Okay, all right, back there. Back off, all right. So Allison then says, also, the format of all this in-quick chat, online, broadcast, telephoning in, extremely multidimensional experience. That's payday and what we're doing today. And then Jade says, incomplete is a state we will always be, always growing. And then Jean says, I don't have a song yet, Bob. I haven't assigned her a song sign. But then she goes, wait, I do. It's Zappa's Stairway to Heaven. Well, that's been given to Eliza, Jean. I don't know if we can have two people have the same song. Then Julia from Florida comes in and says, hi, Vincent. Can you please tell me what you see around me divorcing Kay? Thank you and happy Thanksgiving. And then one of our people comes back in from, you know, Will from OK Land says, ahoy, Bob. Glad to see we've all survived your radio death march. You had me worried. You know, the mousy tongue death march. Yes, it ain't over yet, OK. Don't get too happy yet. I mean, sympathy for the devil and all, right? Remember that one?
Well, the words, you've destroyed many a man's soul and faith by crushing all of their sacred cows.
And sacred, what other word can we use? Cow, sacred icon, sacred chip
sacred
nano
icon,
meme.
Yeah.
Sacred memes is more.
Sacred memes, much better,
yeah.
Yes.
So Linus Minimax has an interesting quote. He says, from Marshall McLuhan, and this was where the ghost of Marshall McLuhan was interviewed for Wired magazine in January 96, and they have McLuhan saying, I am quite certain the product can't be eliminated entirely, but again, it could be given away for free to people who purchase the advertising. And Mark D. says, that is the conundrum of the products promoted by Bob and Company. You get that, Carolyn?
No.
People buy the advertising. That's your, these shows or the cassettes or whatever they're called, the recordings and all the purchase of information is the advertising. And
right.
We could give away the products for free.
Right.
But the advertising is part of the product. You define yourself what you think you are doing when you get the product, which Ion said would have to be. It's not a placebo effect, but the mind will be going through changes, and if you give them concepts to change with, that's part of the answer to cancer.
Right, and our advertising is testimonials and
people get it for free.
And advertising the mini trial
right.
bottle.
Yeah. See, we sell our product and the advertising for free, but McLuhan said mm-hmm. you could sell your advertising and people would buy it and give away the product for free. Just wanted to point that out. Interesting dialogue going on of areas of interest I'm concerned with. Okay, now we're now back with me, right, Greg? It's up to me to do something here. I'm in charge.
Well, we're still here to support you. I will be on mute just for a few minutes while I've got to deal with a few things here, but I believe Virginia's my wing girl, and she is there to support you, too.
Right.
Is there a special something that you've done in the last 4 days that will stick out in your mind forever? You know, something momentous. You saw a shooting star at the 30th hour or something like that. Is there anything you can tell us about what's going on?
No, there's been great things. I don't know what sticks out first. There might be, I'll have to think about that, see what comes through in the next few minutes. But right now, there's lots of people waiting to potentially talk, so I will...
All participants are now unmuted.
...speak. All those that have called in, like Susanna must have something interesting to say in response to the profundity she's been experiencing plus the triviality. What do you say, Susanna? You're the smartest. What does Ion say? The smartest bird in the cage. What is it? What's he always say about you? The smartest dodo in the canarium. Anyway, Suzanne is one of the smartest people here, at least conceptually, left hemisphere, and that's because Dallas is way behind us and just arriving in the left hemisphere world. They call it the southern belt. So, Susanna, what do you conceptually say in response to the perceptual environment so generated over the last 2 hours?
I'm speechless.
As usual. You're not speechless. Just say what you want to say, you know, what you couldn't say.
What I couldn't say?
Yeah, quote someone else. You can have deniability.
I appreciate the treasury of everyone's wisdom.
And that is always said with a mocking tone.
as many of your of what you say is said, much
That's
of what
right.
you say is said in a mocking tone.
See, you understand. Now, the next person, the next smartest bird in the canary or the chenary or the aviary is Madeline. Madeline, you have anything to contribute before we go back into homework mode? She doesn't seem to be saying anything. It's people are like, they're here and they're not here, you know. They're online, but they're not. Now, there's somebody called Colin from 802. Would you like to speak? You're up there in Vermont. We don't know you. We don't think we do. Would you like to speak?
Yeah, hi, Bob. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, what's your name?
My name's Colin Tompkins. I'm a New Englander.
All right. That sounds, there's something familiar in your voice. Is this Kiggy and another name?
No, I've never spoken to you, Bob.
All right. What would you like to say?
Well, several things. I'm a big advocate of kombucha, and I feel like that in some way takes care of the lysine that you've been talking about. I feel I get a good amount of my amino acids from that source as well as alkalinity. And I just wanted to question or talk about the validity of brewing and consuming kombucha as a source as opposed to taking the Realign, which I was earlier this summer. And I found a big difference taking the Realign, but it's not as practical for me to consume. I feel like kombucha is closer to a sort of non-physical form or liquid fermentation, kind of like the RNA product. So maybe that's a question for Carolyn if she's still
Yeah, Carolyn's
online.
Here. We'll see if she has something to say. Do you have anything to say, Carolyn?
Right. Yeah, a lot of us have heard about kombucha over the years. It's kind of a fungus growth that you make. You have to start with this mushroom culture or the mother of it, and you add was it water, they put tea in it, sugar,
yep,
or vinegar, starter tea or vinegar, and I don't know that it has lysine in it. I don't know if the ingredients have been documented. It is a fermented product. I guess the mushrooms have something. But it's not going to replace RNA drops or Realign or anything.
Here's
like that.
Here's what I'm prompted to say. Just a second, Colin. I want to say this, Carolyn. I never think of taking Realign as a separate thing. It is just the garbage truck for the RNA drops. Now, what you would do, Colin, you may not have the funds to do it, but to do our stuff is to do Realign, RNA drops, Remag, Relight, and what's the other one? And Renew. You do these five things. That's the program. That's the completeness.
Okay.
And if you're only doing one part, which is understandable at the beginning, but eventually, when you take those five, you've got something equal to a treatment for cancer. The stuff is so powerful that I wouldn't focus on kombucha or blue-green algae. That stuff's puny.
Cancer, right?
What?
No, I'm saying it's an aid to cancer, right? Not a treatment.
That's a good point. Yes, we help your cancer develop and grow and establish
no,
a balance.
Honestly, Baba, yeah, I've been taking RNA for almost over a year now, and I'm dating an Ionet who has Sarah Donnelly. She did a session with Ion a few years back, and she's a big proponent of the product, and I've definitely spread it around New England, so.
Well, that's great. I remember the name. Now, the point is nothing. Kombucha does not make new cells.
Right.
And that's what we're doing. And nothing can claim that. And maybe the FDA could disclaim it, but we know we're creating something because of dramatic effects that are happening.
So can you talk about alkalinity a little bit, maybe, Carolyn? Because I'm also wondering about meditation and some of the physiological processes that go along as a result of that. Is the alkalizing of the blood and the slowing down or the calming of the system. So I'm curious, is the RNA or the minerals or whatnot helping with the alkalinity of our body? I know that was a...
Well, in the descriptions of magnesium and many of the minerals, they have an alkalizing effect. But, you know, what's fascinating, Colin, is that the RNA drops are more of an acidic pH. And if you heard some of Ion's words today, he talked about the negative pH. We're actually measuring something that is unmeasurable in the lab, and it's negative pH. So there's a flip here where the acidity is what's happening in the environment, and maybe what we're looking at is our bodies being able to adapt more to acidity and be comfortable with it, so that, you know, we don't think we're less than and have to go off and do things that, you know, maybe we don't have the time for. They're painful to do. Like, I could never meditate. I just don't have any patience for meditation. So if I thought that I had to meditate in order to be alkaline, in order to deal with cancer, in order to be healthy, I mean, that's a lot of less thanness. So
sure. That's not why I meditate, but another
question. Oh, I know, but... And when I make an answer, I'm kind of doing I'm not just focusing on you. I tend to make a real general answer just so...
For all the listeners.
Everybody can, you know, hear what I'm
saying.
But
let's hear Colin's particular point. You're trying to say something, Colin. Go ahead.
Oh, well, earlier I'd wanted to speak with Ion about mantra and the difference between the meditation that I do works with mantra, but repeating it in your head, which, you know, I have a question about because... It's a method of sort of deprogramming the nervous system. And I also work with mantra out loud, so I wanted to talk to you guys or Ion about the essence of mantra and that language, but more or less the difference between speaking it aloud and saying it in your head. So.
Right. Okay. I know Ion says there are no laws in the universe. So he's radically ascientific. And he says a belief is a thought you've been thinking for a long time. He calls meditation medication. He says that when you have your new power, full-fledged growing power where you can raise the dead every day, you would not be in limiting positions of repeating a mantra, which is an external pattern given to you or developed by you outside of yourself to be the switch turner on, you know, the switch gear. And so I don't think Ion would be impressed, ultimately. But Ion always says, if that's the fastest path to your joy, no problem doing the mantra and all that.
Well, another huge subject in the social media, too, is the marijuana realm. And so in some ways, that's the fastest path to a lot of people's joy. And
yes.
It's really it's intriguing how many ties there are with that, the cannabinoids and cancer and basically...
Okay, let me say this, Colin. The fastest path to joy, Ion's all for that. There's no point ignoring it. But it'll always evoke contrast. And it's the dealing with contrast that Ion is pretty good at helping you do. So, yes, maybe we have the treatment for cancer, and Ion has told us that once this is eradicated by our technique... We are going to get more vicious diseases because the human, the little man, will always create contrast. So if you're getting healed by marijuana, there will be a backlash, so to speak, about it. We're the only ones aware of the backlash and know that the process of new diseases will be forever dumped on us, and we will make products to handle that. There's nobody else operating on that level.
Well, thank you for taking care of it.
Now, here's the thing. About your, his point about your, oh yeah, the thing is you're on the drops. I say if you can afford it, and you should be able to afford it, never stop taking them. We are getting many cases, including myself, 2 or 3 years after taking the drops continuously, new things surface. And if I had stopped a year ago figuring I had completed the program, I would miss the extra things that are being worked on and developed. So there is, I don't care what effects one's getting the first year. The rule for me is, or the law, is that you, in a world with no laws, if I'm going to be socially fascist, I would tell you, keep taking the drops no matter what, because the unforeseen things are coming after 2 or 3, 4 years.
Sure. Yeah, I couldn't stop if I wanted to.
Right, that's good. And what is Donnelly's first name?
Sarah.
Sarah Donnelly, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
So, Carolyn, do you have anything to add as a responsible practitioner?
Well, about the kombucha, I guess I don't really promote it and recommend it because people have to be very careful when they grow it because you can it can become contaminated and you may not know it. But
right.
it's like a very good fermented product. Then you look at the mushroom aspect of it, and you know, there. I don't know that it's called a medicinal mushroom, but taking something that's kind of medicinal that stirs up your immune system every day, as they say mushrooms do. I don't know specifically about kombucha, but you know, that might not be such a great thing. But you know, all that aside, are you making it yourself, Colin?
Yeah, I do.
If you're making it, you know, in a clean way, and you look at it as a fermented product, you know, take a little bit of it every day, it's certainly not going to hurt, and it will help in the probiotic level. And as you said, RNA drops, they're probiotic themselves anyway. So it's kombucha would mainly just parallel the probiotic aspect of RNA drops, and that would be it as far as I could see.
If this kombucha is making you an interesting person, I want you to stay here, and I'm going to take a new call right now, but you should remain, and we'll see what...
Hello?
Just a minute. Just quiet. I'm addressing Colin, and we'll see what patterns your mouth can come up with responding to Mark, who just come in. I know a bit about Mark. We know that he posted over in the other place that his wife is quite agitated today, which he's having fun with. And so we'll see what does the kombucha do for your active involvement with thought and word in this clinic or this laboratory as we unfold. So you call and stay on the line if you can, and let's see what Mark has to say, relevant or not, on the surface to what we've been talking about. Take it away, Mark. Tell us about Gail.
Okay. Well, I was dissected there because I had kombucha that came in to my grocery store, Davy Jones Locker in Charleston, Oregon. And these big blobs of these mushroom fungus things came in these half-gallon jars, and people told me that it was the elixir of life. And I'm looking at this fungus going, all right. So 14 years later, we have a tea coming on to cook in Eagle Valley or the Vale Valley called kombucha tea. And it was created, and the FCC came down because it had alcohol in it. And actually in bread, there's alcohol, so there wasn't so much to deal with that. But it's still going on. It's unnecessary. I think when you deal with fermented foods, you got to be very careful. Like Carolyn stated, for the last 4 weeks, and kombucha is a precursor of contaminants, if not sterile.
A couple of things I would like to say. One, the kombucha mushroom being an ancient Chinese remedy in itself, I feel, is just that. And up until this point and day and age in which we're becoming aware of all the gross and weird things that we're consuming, they're very like flowers and whatnot tend to be off-balancing in the pH. So for me, it has in the past and is a balancing effect as far as alkalinity, but it's just that. And in terms of contamination, the fungus itself is antibacterial. So in regards to not worrying about contaminations or things of that nature and the properties of the mushroom itself, it's really not a big issue. And you can do certain things like open-air brewing with beer as well if you throw hops right in there. You no longer need an airlock because the mushroom itself, acting as the yeast, is antibacterial. So it really can be considered an elixir in regards to the amount of electrolytes, probiotics, polyphenols, and such that are in it. But as Bob's saying, it's not going to be necessary if you're taking RNA, and I found that as such. But also, I like to have tea, you know, so it's a fermented tea, basically, and the goby, or the which is the trademarked name of such a fungus, which originally comes from a birch tree, I believe, in China. But I lost my train there. It also feeds on the caffeine and the tea and the sugar. And when you get your final product, there's no more excess sugar or caffeine, which I don't really like to consume in the first place. And it's very mellow, and it just is a nice drink to have during the day. So that's what I have to say about it.
All right, Colin, we'll see what you have to say about other topics to see how the far range of your creativity and the power of the mantra. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
I would agree with everything he said, but after hearing today with the insulucinos that came from the different
world or from the ascended state, it's substance from the ascended state.
Right, so that erases every aspect of everything we thought about prior to organic sugars.
Yes.
So then that changes the fermentation, because you can't fermentate. The only thing that's stable that Carolyn's ever said was sea salt. It's the only thing, and Dr. B talked about that, and Dr. B is a different subject, but it's the only stable part with the breakdown of the water. But the sugar has changed. That's why the fermentation has changed to the insulinose.
Right, insulinose.
Insulinose.
Yeah, see, we are changing matter, and all the rules are going out the window. It's a new way to develop temporary patterns, not really solid print-oriented rules. This is the jazz-like, improvisational nature of our reality now.
So, Bob, could I the Volvo was pretty cool. I'm going to show you pictures, but anyway,
What was pretty cool?
The Volvo that I picked up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Well, you use mass of the vehicle to propel yourself after you go into neutral. It's an amazing concept. You're propelling yourself through mass.
Right.
Not to the engine. And I know you know this, but what I wanted to talk about to you, and I wanted to change the subject because I'm tired of hearing about chemicals and stuff, and I apologize, I'm not here that much. I wanted to hear when you and Carolyn walk through Central Park, did you walk through Park when you experienced the music?
Yes, we would walk the Central Park, the reservoir, every day for 7 years.
Really?
Yes. We were up on East 91st. We lived on East 91st, which is oligarchic row. You know, that's where the 100 years ago, the I can't even remember their names now, but the guys who were around the Rothschild and Warburg. Yeah, Warburg lived on there. But anyways, we lived up there, and we would go over to the reservoir, which is a wonderful place to walk, and we did it every day for 7 years. And, a couple of breaks when something came out, we didn't. But now what? Okay, so we did that. So what are you saying about this walk or the environment?
And what you had, maybe you went at night, and you went to listen to places like the bird.
Yes, we would go to concerts. We'd go to concerts in the field, yes. Down in the Sheepshead Meadows and other places, there were all kinds of bands and performances and Tavern on the Green. We generally would go to walk during the day, and a concert would be just maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks. I went to the museums, the Metropolitan Museum. I rotate through MoMA, Museum of Modern Art, Guggenheim's and Whitney. I went to them, one of them, every Friday. So I walk through New York and all the major cultural and geographic locations every day, or at least once a week, in the museums for 7 years. And then it continued once we moved to City Island. But I know the museums pretty good now.
And when you walked through them, did you laugh, say, I know what you're hiding?
Yes, I actually was not impressed, but I walked through looking, is there anything worth preserving in here? I never really found anything, but I gave it to my shot. I gave them the benefit of the doubt for 7+ years and decided, no, I'm leaving this city. I'm moving out to City Island. And of course, I was on my way to create the most amazing museum art composition, which is Iandum. And that was my wandering, like St. Augustine, among the ruins of the Roman Empire. you know, when he was there in 400 A.D., I considered my stay in the Earth as walking among the ruins, the four levels, the chemical body ruins, the astral body, the chip body, and the TV body, and then it led somewhere. That's the good news. So I wandered for many years looking at the ruins, happy in my reality, engaging, participating, pretending I was interested, but on my way somewhere else.
So there was nothing left except
there was nothing
for
there.
The word.
Yes, other than what I would do, you might have heard me mention it, for the my street activity, I would go to any author that was happening in all the Barnes & Nobles and all this stuff. So much stuff goes on every day in New York City, so there was always something interesting. So I would go to some author, whoever it was, and listen to their little spiel, and then get up and immediately begin to inject McLuhan or LaRouche into the discussion, which shocked everybody. But after as the years unfolded, I became a known, quote, crank, you could say. Some people liked me. Some people didn't like me, but I persisted. Even got to confront and carry on the debate between Margaret Atwood and McLuhan. Finally got access to her at some Barnes & Noble. So I was doing my guerrilla work there on the job, pattern recognition with my chart. So it was awesome what I did. I was a modern form. I was an engaged postmodern, paramodern artist. Scientist,
yeah, I know
right
you
there.
Guys. You guys are a fucking asshole. But anyway, did you...
no, that's what I would say to them.
The editor?
That was one of my main conclusions every night with some stupid book.
I know you did a subgenius, but did you submit a letter to the editor every week?
No, I never did the editors. I only did one letter to the editor, the Globe and Mail a few years ago, where I pilloried Nelson Thal for ruining my legacy in Toronto.
Why didn't you reciprocate and attack with words to the media?
Oh, I didn't like typing. I don't like sitting. And so I use my mouth. I don't write much. I don't like writing. I do short emails. I don't like typing and sitting. I'm a jock. I'm an athlete.
Yeah, okay. Because I've been attacked by the other side, and it was relentless. Because
yes,
they write and write and write. And the
that's right. I don't want to get caught. Writing is silly. I'd rather talk to someone directly, maybe a few emails for directions, but to type up endless pages and have someone else totally misinterpret what you're saying, it's stupid. Writing is a cancerous in a negative sense. Well, if we can't say cancer, Ken, what is it? It's a... what is a bad thing? It's a negative pH activity. What do we call it? Well, we can't even have a negative. But if we had to say a negative, what would be yeast overgrowth?
Polarity.
Writing is yeast overgrowth.
Well, you're doing polarity on paper. Paper
yes.
Can have a pH, and then you're changing the pH by the ink.
See, right now, I would be, my Wednesdays once a month, are engaged in the Finnegan's Wake Society of New York. They allow me to phone in and participate. My main interaction on the academic level was studying Finnegan's Wake with this group at the Gotham Bookmart from 93 to 2000, and that's a great activity. I've missed it over the last few years, and I finally decided to rejoin them by phone, and I sacrificed my perfect attendance record this year for this amazing week. But I will be back there next month. But anyways, Finnegan's Wake is the only literary thing that is endlessly procreative, and that is an ascended book. If you want to maintain a little bit of vestiges of literacy, Finnegan's Wake is the way to do it.
I know we talked about that. I was going back to your romantic walks and listening to music when you first came to New York. I wanted to hear what you heard when you and Carolyn came in.
I heard everything. I heard jazz, classical music, operas, pop culture.
Did you hear Coltrane? Did you hear Miles Davis?
Yes.
Did you hear?
See, I've been doing Central Park since the 50s. All right. Anytime I go to New York, and I usually spend time in New York City, I'd always go around and take advantage of the parks as well as going to the clubs. I have played with everybody. Now, how do I play? I go and listen to them. Then I get backstage by luck, and I have a conversation. And one of the most common repeated motifs is, they said to find me interesting by my words. So Cecil Taylor, as an example, says to me, "Do you play an instrument?" And I say, "Yes." He says, "What is it?" I play the radio, and they all laugh.
But that's the best, because us musicians are cursed. I wish I was never a musician. I wish
that's right.
That I could only hear. I wish I could only listen to music.
which is what I do. I am very glad that I am a consumer. Yes, you guys miss out. And, you know, McLuhan ends one of his books with Mozart saying he liked no music. Now, that might have been hyper-productivity, but he didn't have a comfortable relationship to it. And then George Bernard Shaw, he puts on a play, and he walks out, and everybody's applauding, but one guy boos. And George Bernard Shaw says, "I quite agree, sir, but what are we two against so many?"
I played at a bar way back in Salem, Oregon, and the guy at the bar goes, "You suck." And I was singing, and I go, "You know what? You're absolutely right."
Yeah, you know, being a musician, you create a headache in relation to the wonderful pleasure of music. You know, you got to do it if that's what the way you make a living. But I understand why it's a drag. You would rather walk around and hear and enjoy music and not be happy by telling you that you fucking sucked. I never was told, I am the worst singer in the world, but I was never told I sucked while I enjoyed all the music.
No, you wouldn't.
Now, I'll tell you another thing I enjoyed. Manhattan Neighborhood Network had these awesome shows, and every Friday night, Carol and I would watch Snuggles. Was that his name, Carol? Snuggles?
Yeah.
Yeah. Snuggles was a little white polar bear, and he would present, it was obviously some record store collector, and he would put up the most obscure albums from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and he would bob his head, you know, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, now we're going to hear Miles Davis. Miles is a wonderful musician." So he'd give a little rap, and then they'd play the music and watch this obscure album. And that is like one of the greatest shows I'd watch religiously, a great half hour of incredible variety of obscure records with Snuggles reporting and commenting on. And so while the song was on, Snuggles, which was just a hand puppet, he'd there be bouncing in unique ways on the side of the screen. And the only guy who got to share Snuggles with me was Bob Marshall when he came to New York one time.
And
there's
find
probably Snuggles on YouTube. We need to promote.
I found them. Yeah.
We will post on Dupe Snuggles. Okay, Mark. One of my major musical experiences because I wasn't a professional.
Oh no, it was Snuffles.
Oh, it was Snuffles. What'd you just say, Mark?
No, you said Snuggles. That's the
That's Matthew. Over. We're influenced by Matthew.
Yeah.
Snuffles. That's right, Snuffles.
Yeah, and we have a Snuffles bear in our bear collection.
Yes, we always have a nice one.
Well, but your own's a bear connector. Wow.
And you know what's interesting? On Manhattan Cable, it was the same as walking in a park. You'd have all these programs that people record music and clubs and all that. And some would be good quality, not. But the variety was incredible. I mean, I had a very, you know, not only doing the literate museums, I had an incredibly abundant TV body life all through the 90s. Yeah.
Did you do beatnik? Did you do the beat rap?
Yes, and I used to go, Bob Marshall and I used to go to young black rap clubs, and I'd get up, and I'd soberly explain my chart, and that caused a lot of tension in the club.
That's funny as shit.
What?
You went to Soho, and you did?
Yeah.
I would point.
They'd be open night with comedians, and I'd get up there, and I would lecture. I'd have about 5 or 10 minutes to lecture the young kids. I would just seriously try to explain the chart. And the first few times, there was lots of laughter. But the third time, after I did it, these thugs would walk by, and they'd mumble under their breath. I started to get death threats, you know. Or they would say, "Why don't you do it in rap rhythm?" You know, they'd demand at me to toe the musical correct line. So we were the dadaists, my scene, the dadaists and the surrealists, whatever you call an art movement that upsets the bourgeoisie. I did that constantly in New York in many modalities.
Was that post-subgenius?
Yes. Well, the subgenius had died. I nailed them several times when they came to New York, and it's legendary.
The funniest story I've ever heard. And you came incognito and...
That's right. And I spent time talking to Stang and Jesus. I remember manager was called Jesus. And I discussed, different things about the church and that. And then I'm over there where Stang is selling swag. And I start asking him about this ridiculous Canadian Bob Dean. That's what they called him. And I discussed Bob Dean with Stang.
The Antichrist.
Yeah, yeah. And heard him and the others, they start yelling and screaming at Bobby Dean. And so then the next day, I posted off Slack that it was me that talked to them, and they had heart attacks all through the organization. It was like they never recovered from it.
Yeah. That is so cool. God, that's hysterical.
Yeah, what I did, I made myself look real Canadian. I put a Canadian toque on my head and pulled it over my face. I never wear a toque, but, I mean, it was not over my skin part, but it was over my hair. I looked ridiculous. And the one guy who witnessed it, Michael Graves, is a prominent poet in New York City, and we reconnected through the Finnegan's Wake Society a few months ago, and so I had a chance to, what is this, it's 1996, so almost, well, 20, 15, 17 years later, Mike and I, about 2 months ago, reminisced about that great night in April, March, April, in the wetlands when he witnessed what I did to Stang and them. And he was a member of our old Finney's Wake Society. Now we're together again, and he has an ongoing poetic thing. And matter of fact, you can go online, Mark. You might want to hear this. A dialogue between Murray Gross, who's the president of the Finney's Wake Society of New York, and Michael Graves and myself, just winging it and using our wits about us and talking and referring to Finney's Wake. And both of them really loved it. They're not used to having themselves recorded. They're POBs. And you go to my timeline, and I'll look it up in a minute. Remind me. I'll give you the exact date. It was a couple of months ago, and you'll see Michael Graves and Murray Gross. And that's an interesting dialogue, but it's based on the Finney's Wake Society, which I was doing 20 years ago, starting in 93, with Murray Gross.
Yeah, I'm getting off discourse. I want to know what Carolyn thought about walking through New York and listening to music. What did she think?
I was too busy in the lab.
Oh,
I was working in the lab most of the time.
Yeah, no, Carolyn would go to an occasional Zappa concert or whatever was happening. I would drag her out, but she actually is a very left hemisphere person. She's always doing her science, and she was a driven zombie, you know, a person who had a destiny. And that's what she liked to do, and she was working in the lab and doing this and that, always developing her chops for what she was going to be doing.
All right.
I don't think she ever saw me do Barnes & Noble. Hardly ever walked through the museum. She basically ignored New York City. She did her work.
I did the park, though. I walked.
You did walk through the park, but not with me.
Leonard Cohen, did you have any poets? Simon Garfunkel, did you have any poets?
Yes, I did. Carolyn didn't.
Carolyn knows nothing
about culture.
Okay, all right, she's left hemisphere, right.
That's right.
Her
She's a great dancer, and it can immediately, she can go into the right hemisphere world of poetry and instantly become the center of attention if she had the time or inclination. But they don't, that scene doesn't attract her. She's a bureaucrat of the new age, of the new situation. Do you get that? A bureaucrat, a manager.
Yeah, I got that.
Mark feels sorry for me.
Yeah, Mark is depressed.
Poor girl. Oh, my gosh.
Like, you guys are just... All right.
Say it. I like any description. We are just what?
A dysfunctional couple walking down Central Park with one...
That's right.
...creating the world and the other one's enjoying music.
Yeah. Well, we spent a whole many years in Toronto. We're never seen in public together. We didn't go out in public together at all because back then it couldn't be known. That was the creation of the entire world.
Toronto created the entire music scene. That's unknown.
That's right. Yes, and I was in the middle of that. I should play you just a little fragment of my performance at Beverly Tavern in 1985 with the Madonna "Dress You Up," which we're talking about. I'm looking at the Bobathon on the timeline. It's incredible. You got 24 hour. It's like expanded with these 24 hour allotments.
Frank are integral as a common denominator.
Okay, listen to this. Carolyn has attended many Zappa concerts. She never missed Zappa. So she went with the best Zappa, an incredible experience, you know, news Frank, and seeing Zappa once a year, once every other, that satisfied any cultural left right hemisphere desires. Everybody else was puny. So Carolyn was a fanatic devotee. She got her music and culture from Mr. Zappa, and that's a great statement, a great tribute to her.
And our honeymoon,
Sun Ra and Sun Ra. Carolyn also liked Sun Ra and did acupuncture in Sun Ra in Toronto, the Horseshoe Tavern in 78. But Carolyn wore for many years the Muhammad Ali t-shirt that Muhammad Ali gave her. She slept in that. And then she slept in, I know, Paul Buff personally. Paul Buff was the owner of Cucamonga Studio Z, Cucamonga, that Frank bought in the early 60s. And we eventually got in touch with Paul Buff because Carolyn had herself photographed in Central Park with this aristocratic horse scene, horse sense, horse shit kind of scene, you know, where she's a snobbish aristocrat. But then the other image is her being her, what does he call it, a throwaway jujube, standing among TVs with this t-shirt on, the most obscure hip, in terms of obscure, the hippest t-shirt. It says, I know Paul Buff personally.
Yeah, then, Buff.
You get that, Mark? He's still there?
It's hard to understand.
I was
photographed for a book about
women of New York.
Famous women in New York, and the author of the book who wrote us up and photographed, somehow she decided she wanted to dress me up in some sort of turban thing and wanted me to sit on a white horse in Central Park in the winter.
With hardly any clothes on, right?
Right. Some flimsy, whatever thing wrapped around me. And I mean, the horse was like 10 feet tall. I couldn't even get anywhere near it. So I guess I stood by the horse and we took a picture and then we ran back to wherever so I could get some clothes on.
Right, but that was the cold picture, and then the warm picture is you standing among, you know, crash TVs with I know Paul Buff.
Yeah.
And Paul Buff is very important in recording. It was at his studio where Wipeout and the surf stuff happened, and Frank was learning that he had the most 24-track, whatever, multi-track studio, and then he went on to Nashville. And when I told him about this picture, the T-shirt, he went and got the book, and he came back. He said, you know what? I made that T-shirt. He made it to celebrate himself, and he didn't know where it went. There was only a few copies around, but Jerry Fiocchi had gotten it. So he found out that Buff made the T-shirt himself.
Buff made the T-shirt.
Right.
Carolyn, did you enjoy the music? Seriously, that's all I want to ask. Did you enjoy the music and dance, or do you assimilate it?
Is there a difference?
Yeah, there is a difference. Yeah, there's a technical side and there's the enjoyment side. I fight with both. It's my counting, and then I go and dance, you know.
Well, Carolyn is an expert dancer. She was an expert in Europe in Scottish dancing and used to play in dancing contests and win them, the bagpipe dancing, because she had a heavy Scottish influence in her family. And so she had the strong legs as a young girl and was a great dancer, and she's the only one who can dance and keep up with me.
Picture perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, we are perfect. You're not getting anybody more perfect than us. And no, even being, we're perfect, but we've murdered people, we've stolen stuff, we're perfect criminals. And then anybody starts to smear us and say, you guys are not good if you sell stuff, or you're not living up to the standards of medicine. I just tell them that most of our lives have been spent with the criminal element. We've always hung out with criminals, right?
That's part of the musical environment. I just wanted to know if she danced.
Oh, yeah, Carolyn is an excellent dancer. Sky Goddess Sue had seen Carolyn dance. We used to, in the 70s, when we lived in Halifax, we'd go to clubs, and there was a lot of blues bands and, you know, baby boomer blues bands. We'd start at some point dancing up a storm. Everybody would get off the floor and watch me and Carolyn dancing to the blues, to electric blues.
Well, my dad and my mom, and they divorced when I was 11. They were tremendous dancers.
Well, we are, too. We haven't been dancing lately, but we enjoy walking, and we're probably floating when we walk, and people at the local pool in the, what do you call it?
You dance
compound?
With Marty. You dance with Marty on the boat.
Right. You saw Carolyn dancing.
Yeah, with Lynn. You said we haven't danced lately. Yeah, we've been dancing, Marty on the boat.
Well, you have lately, yeah. Those that come to Hawaii. What, Carolyn?
You say we were on the boat dancing.
Yeah, so yeah, she saw you dancing. You saw Carolyn dancing.
Lynn's just saying you said we haven't danced in a while.
Well, we don't dance in clubs. We have not danced in clubs.
We dance on a swaying boat on a tiny little postage stamp boat.
floor
with all kinds of interruptions all over that you can kill yourself over.
Yeah. I know it.
So it's like Olympic dancing or terrorist
dancing. No, mosh pit.
Mosh pit.
Yeah. And we had the Olympians with us, Lorraine.
What?
We had the Olympian with us, Lorraine.
Yeah, but the thing is, I was saying about the dancing. What was I going to say about it? We are dancing. We used to dance in clubs and clear the place. And, so I'm looking here, and I have found it. Murray Gross and Mike Graves, conversation with me, October 13, 2013. So go to the timeline, October 13, and listen to that MP3. It's very interesting. It's a whole part of the Finnegan's Wake part of my life that comes out. And Michael Graves was there and witnessed my invasion of the Church Subgenius in the spring of 1996.
But you don't talk about that on this interview, do you?
What interview? No. We're not interviewing. It's a discussion.
You don't talk about that on the discussion, do you?
No, we don't talk about that.
Okay.
That's Mike and I privately on the phone when we first reconnected. We went over that night. I mean, it was all new to him. He's a local, well-versed New York poet, but he'd never heard of Church Subgenius, so he didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
I just wanted to know about your musical aspect when you guys came to New York. That's all I was asking.
Yes. Remember, do you know this, Mark? What did we do on our Halloween, on our honeymoon in 1970? We did the hippest thing for the 60s. We went to a five-day every night
we
at Flood.
Flew from where?
Well, we were up in Nova Scotia.
Flew from Nova Scotia to New York.
And we took Steve with us. This was we got married on July, June.
Steve the dog?
No, what? Was he the dog?
Steve the dog.
Yeah, no. On June 9th, we got married, 1970. But we were so busy doing espionage work that we didn't get to do our Halloween, our honeymoon, until 6 weeks later in July. So in July 70, we go to New York, and Steve Jameson came with us, whose mother always claimed I was the Antichrist.
And now Steve thinks you're the Antichrist.
And Steve now agrees with his mother that I am the Antichrist. He's shocked at Carolyn, who he always...
Steve turns into his mother.
Yeah, that Steve, who always respected Carolyn, really is bothered by the fact that this icon of respectability is still hanging out with the Antichrist. Why is she still doing it? He's disgusted with Carolyn. So anyways, we go there, and we go to Slugs every night for 5 days for five-hour concerts by Sun Ra. And that is the hippest thing you could ever fucking do for a honeymoon.
Oh, God, that's unbelievable.
That's right. You're hip enough to understand the hipness of it.
Sun Ra has been a mystery. He was a mystery when I understood him in 73. But you, God. Wow.
Yeah, now listen to this. Go to our addenda. The addenda item with all those excerpts on howionic.com, and listen to Ion goes on about an hour with Sun Ra explaining how he actually was from Saturn.
Yeah. I remember that.
Ion explained it. What?
No, I heard that when I was in high school. Yeah, I heard the disconnect.
Yeah, it wasn't a disconnect. He actually was not from here, and Ion explains it.
It was a switchgear, yeah.
Yeah, so 8 years later, Carolyn treated Sun Ra with acupuncture in Toronto.
Oh!
In 1978.
Wow.
So we are the hippest couple of the 20s. We will be the immortal, you know, thousands of years. What will they remember from this period? Just like we remember Abelard and Heloise, you know, from the anomalous philosopher.
Well, if you could explain the music of Sun Ra for the last 6 years, you would have an entire book, because it's mysterious.
Yes, no, I can explain all these guys, so I'd rather just talk it and rather than type it up. And I don't want to be edited. So I'm always, if you can ask me about Sun Ra, I'll go into a rap. So I'm always re-editing or redefining or adding to what I've already said about Sun Ra. That's why people are looking forward to when we can digitally take all the recordings of thousands of hours, and then you have an audio checkpoint. You know, you put in Sun Ra, and it'll bring up all the sound bites.
Did you ever meet a street musician that was powerful that you walked by in New York?
Well, Moondog.
I don't know Moondog.
Yeah, he's a legend in New York in the 60s. Even Garrett Dean knew Moondog. Just go to the Wikipedia. I'm a regular listener to Bob Fass's radio show, and I played excerpts. All the people of New York, because he's the museum, he's the collector. He's the one who made Dylan famous in New York. He made a lot of people famous. They just made a movie on him, a documentary called Radio Unnameable. But if you listen to his show, and it's been going for 50 years, everybody passed through his show. I mean, he engineered Malcolm X when he was doing his rants in 63, 64, before he got killed in 65. He's like Gerd Stern, and they are good friends. So I am the collector of collectors of collectors, collecting collectors, you know.
That's why I want to capture music. I want to hear the music.
Well, no, I try.
It's difficult. The digital has erased the history of people walking down to listen to music in New York when you listen to it.
That's
you
right.
You came in, you had a new perspective, and I want to know that perspective, because you listen to Cecil Taylor, however, you must have listened to Bob Powell and Jim Hall and
Pharoah Sanders,
Charles and Roland Kirk.
Yeah, and Charles the Mingus. I had interesting dialogues with all of them. I'm sitting there one night, and Charles Mingus, I came in.
That's sick, dude. That's incredibly powerful. But you don't write till you do an oratory. So somebody has to question you about this history.
Well, that's what Jean wants to do. She wants to, we need the opportunity, she wants to go through my diaries and ask me about each entry, and me orally fill out the details, which we could.
You could not, if you didn't feel it, you got to have history of the music on this aspect.
Well, I can do that. The point is, I can talk about it. I don't have any rules about it. I'm not a counter. I talk about whatever comes up. There's nobody who can talk about as many topics all over the world about anything as much as I can, and I'm the most recorded person. You know, I tell the story. I was in L.A. in 93. We went to a Tim Leary talk, and then I was standing near the bar after it, and I heard the bartender telling someone else, I heard this guy on the radio last night on Roy of Hollywood. He mentioned Mae Brussels, Christian Murdy, Marsha McLuhan, Frank Zappa, and he lists about 25 names. He says, that's absolutely incredible. This guy knew everything, and he talked about it. And then I'm standing there, and when he calmed down, I went over, I said, I was that person, and he almost fucking died. I just happened to be there at the right time when some bar customer provoked him to say that, so I got to hear someone talk about the effect I had being on LA radio. You know, I've been there 5 minutes later, I wouldn't have heard it. And then I was able to tell him that I was the guy that he was talking about, and he didn't know what to say to me. That's the incredible thing.